Next up, Marissa McMahon. McMahon. Yeah.
That's rare.
Good morning, Senator Rennie and distinguished members of the Joint Standing Committee on Marine Resources. I want to thank you for this opportunity to introduce the organization I work for. My name is Marissa McMahon. I'm the Director of Fisheries at a nonprofit organization called Manomet. And I'm also a lifelong Mainer from the coastal town of Georgetown. If you're not familiar with Manomet, we are a nonprofit that was founded in 1969 in Plymouth, Massachusetts, which might be why you're not familiar with us. We originally operated as a bird observatory, but have since expanded into many different sectors, including forestry, agriculture, and fisheries. Our work spans the entire Western Hemisphere, but our fisheries work specifically focuses on the Gulf of Maine, which is experiencing rapid, unprecedented change. And our fisheries office is based right in Brunswick. And we are a small team of three living here in Maine and working to promote resilient and productive coastal ecosystems and communities through applied science and community engagement. We work in partnership with coastal communities, with fishers, with other industry stakeholders to really co-develop climate change adaptation strategies that build greater social, ecological, and economic resilience. We have a fairly broad portfolio of projects we're working on. I won't have time to touch on all of them, but we do have the handout that should provide an overview of our work. And I want to just emphasize that sort of the glue that holds together all of this work is really starting from a position of listening to coastal community members, to stakeholders, hearing about the issues that they're dealing with, hearing about the observations from their day-to-day lives. We bring expertise in coastal ecosystem restoration, fisheries science, fisheries management, climate change adaptation, among other things, to the table, and together with stakeholders and communities, we co-develop strategies to build greater resilience. And I'll give some specific examples of what that looks like in just a moment. The work we're doing includes diversifying fisheries resources through the development of fisheries for emerging and invasive species, through exploring new aquaculture techniques and new aquaculture species. We are also supporting restoration and harvesting for river herring, which is an anadromous species that connects coastal and inland food webs. We conduct species and habitat monitoring in coastal ecosystems to understand how these systems are changing. We lead and support numerous efforts to strengthen shellfish co-management, which I'll talk about more in just a moment, and enhance shellfish resources in the state of Maine. And most recently, we've begun working to understand the impacts of sea level rise to intertidal habitat, shellfish resources, and harvester livelihoods. I do want to take a moment to expand upon the work we're doing in Maine's shellfish industry. That's one that we haven't really heard a whole lot about today yet. This is a large and growing part of our focus, and there was supposed to be a second handout that I wasn't able to actually bring with me that gave some great information and background on Maine shellfish industry. I will make sure that that gets emailed around to everyone. And that was actually put together by a University of Maine graduate student named Gabby Hillier. She's also part of an organization called the Maine Shellfish Learning Network, which is a close partner of ours and does a lot of really great work in the shellfish industry. The wild harvest shellfish industry in Maine is an incredibly important industry. It's been in existence for over 10,000 years. It's a very important part of Wabanaki culture. It supports 1,500 harvester livelihoods along the coast of Maine, and it is Maine's second most valuable fishery. In 2021, the value of landings was $25 million from this industry. The fishery is co-managed by municipalities and the DMR's Nearshore Fisheries Program. There's 75 municipalities along the coast of Maine that are actively managing their shellfish populations and the resource. It's important to point out that these municipal programs and harvesters associated with them are doing an immense amount to support and enhance their local shellfish populations. through restoration, stock enhancement, water quality monitoring, community outreach, et cetera. And a large part of what Manomet does and what organizations like the Maine Shellfish Learning Network, the Casco Bay Regional Shellfish Working Group, the Down East Fisheries Partnership, and others, a lot of what they do is support the municipalities in doing this work because there's often very limited capacity and funding to do this type of shellfish conservation work. We also communicate regularly with the Bureau of Public Health and Nearshore Marine Fisheries Program at DMR. And I also hold the seat on DMR, the science seat on DMR's Shellfish Advisory Council, where we are currently undergoing a process to strengthen co-management of shellfish fisheries in Maine. The second area I'm going to expand on a little bit more, I was actually asked specifically to talk about this. It's more of a story from one of the projects that we've been working on for several years now, and it's a great example of the innovation and creativity and the sort of thinking outside the box mentality that a lot of fishers and communities are employing in Maine to help mitigate and adapt to climate change. So you all may have heard of green crabs. They're a very harmful invasive species. They are wreaking havoc on our shellfish populations, on our coastal ecosystems. They've actually been in Maine since the early 1900s, so they're not a new invasive species, but they're really thriving in recent years as waters have warmed. And so their populations are exploding in abundance, and they're a bigger problem now than they really ever have been before. So a few years ago, a group of folks got together actually in my hometown of Georgetown. And this was a group that was primarily made up of local volunteers and commercial fishermen. And we started asking what could be done about this problem. And one of the locals had actually been working in Venice, Italy at the time. And every seafood restaurant that he went to had a dish on the menu that looked exactly like deep fried soft shell green crabs. And come to find out that is in fact exactly what it was. So there's a centuries old fishery in Italy for green crabs, and it's very lucrative. We were able to connect with some of these Italian crab fishers and learned that they're selling their green crab product at upwards of $55 a pound. And so that was sort of what caught our interest at the beginning. And through multiple exchanges of ideas and actual exchanges of fishermen between Maine and Italy, as well as some key funding from Maine Sea Grant and NOAA, we were able to adapt these Italian fishing techniques here in Maine and produce the very first soft shell culinary green crab product in the United States. What's more, we were able to secure $30 a pound for this product directly going into the pockets of fishermen. And we worked really closely with chefs and restaurants in Midcoast Maine in particular to really understand what the demand looked like. We learned that this was in fact a product that was in very high demand. As soon as chefs put it on their menus, they were selling out immediately. Unfortunately, right as we were gaining all of this momentum, the pandemic hit. And so that really kind of knocked the legs out from underneath this project. It's taken a really long time to regain interest from the fishing community and culinary community in particular, because of course, both of those industries have been under incredible strain from continued pandemic disruptions. However, I am happy to say that now there are a few fishers who are again producing softshell green crabs, and there's a few others who are actually taking advantage of other markets for this species, including the bait market, which primarily operates out of southern New England, but is actually buying hundreds of thousands of pounds of green crabs a year at this point. So that's another great potential opportunity. And I share this story to just highlight that there are opportunities that can be found even where you wouldn't think to look for them. Green crabs are an invasive pest, essentially, but it doesn't mean that we can't find ways to benefit from this species and to create ways for fishers and coastal communities to benefit. I think it's that sort of innovative and creative mindset that we have here in Maine, and with support from legislators like you and from funders who also sort of think outside the box, we have a lot of opportunity to work on diversifying Maine's fisheries and fisheries resources and supporting Maine's coastal communities. I'm going to stop there. I could talk about some of our other projects, but for the sake of time, I will, I'll stop there and just say that, you know, we really see ourselves as a resource for you all on this committee. We're a non-advocacy organization, so we won't advocate on any particular piece of legislation, but we are happy to be scientific, you know, bring scientific expertise to bear on particular issues, to share our experiences, you know, as they relate to the bills that you'll be seeing during this session. And we're more than happy to provide expertise on anything that falls within our scope of work. So thank you for your time and happy to answer questions if you have any.
Representative Dill and then Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the window on the soft shell green crab?
Like the seasonal timing?
Yeah.
So it's an early spring. Well, it depends a little bit on where you are. You know, it starts earlier in the southern part of the state and then sort of progresses. It depends on when the crabs are molting because they need to be in that soft shell phase. So we're seeing that in the mid-coast area, it's typically starts in April and goes through June. So we kind of think of this as a potential, you know, opportunity for lobstermen in particular who could diversify and be able to target this species maybe before they're getting all of their gear in the water or when it's a little bit of the slower season, as well as, you know, clam diggers and others who aren't as active during that time of year.
And so just out of curiosity, are they the same thing as like with the blue crabs and soft shell, they just serve them whole, fried, throw them in a sandwich or whatever?
Yep, absolutely.
Super soft at that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you ever if you ever find anybody who develops a black fly mosquito soup with a side of milfoil, we'd be interested in that. I remember, I think it was on the tour out to Beals Island where someone said that they did a test with a wooden box and they put a mesh screen over the top of the box in the sand on the beach. And there were all these eggs, clam eggs that they, that happened naturally. Well, they went out and they harvested around the box was like a clam here or there inside the box where the green crabs couldn't get to. There were like dozens and dozens and dozens of clams. So, and they said that they'll eat those eggs, just scoop them and go.
Yeah. And that's one of the major issues with green crabs is that a lot of the damage they cause is when they're really small. So if you're trapping for them in a fishery, you're not targeting them when they're in that really small phase. So, you know, we can't necessarily know that this is going to have beneficial positive impact on species like softshell clams, but instead we're sort of focused more on the benefit that it can bring as a diversified source of income to fishers.
It's here, it's not going anywhere,
yeah,
right?
We can't eradicate
it. And is that a process of the warming waters or just migration? Is it north to south or do other states down the East Coast have the same issue?
Yeah, so they invaded in 1817, brought over from Europe and shipped ballast water. And they invaded most likely down by the Chesapeake Bay area and then made their way up and they arrived in Maine in the early 1900s. So they've been here a long time, but the issue right now is that the warming water is really causing the populations to, you know, thrive and increase in abundance.
I see.
So they're more abundant than possibly ever before, which is really why we're seeing, you know, decimation of softshell clams and, you know, eelgrass habitat, salt marsh habitat also being negatively impacted.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dudera.
Thank you very much. I love that you told the story about the Venetian fishermen because I read that in Down East, I believe, way back. And I might have said this to some of you folks who are on the tour. I don't think I said it last week in here, but I met a student of Representative Osher's a couple summers ago who was at UMaine and he was in Camden doing some research on the invasive green crabs, trying to determine when they molt. Because it's my understanding that if they're not soft shell, they're too hard and it's too expensive to pick them, because there's for the small amount of meat you're going to get. So he was actually trying to pinpoint, and I guess that the fishermen in Italy can do this like intuitively, like they've just got the sixth sense of when they're molting. But he said what it's going to, he thinks it's going to come down to, and this guy was not a marine biologist, he's just an entrepreneur, sees an opportunity. He had read about it in Down East too, is either ultrasound technology or AI. And I just wonder, have you heard of this? Do you know who this guy is? Okay, Joe, he made me some crab cakes with them and they were delicious. We saw one molt right while we were there. Okay, good. Tell us about Joe.
Did it turn off? Oh, okay. So one of the things that we really focused on is, you know, figuring out the biology of the molt cycle and then also how you can recognize those molt signs. And you're right, the Venetians can do it in their sleep with their eyes closed. Like they're just, yeah. And we're not that good at it. Although we've been able to, you know, get pretty good at it. But yes, I think where we want to see this go now is for entrepreneurs like Joe and, you know, others. There's a lot of different folks working in this space to sort of take this knowledge and then, you know, build some sort of next step, next business out of it. And so I think what they're doing is really fascinating in terms of trying to use technology to sort of help with that identification of those pre-molt crabs. So yeah, absolutely. I think that's where we hope to see, you know, the continued innovation and the continued sort of building upon the groundwork.
When they're used for bait, are they just used no matter when and just ground up?
Yeah, exactly. So they can be in any state, hard shell, soft shell. So it's a lot easier to get rid of the hard shell product into the bait market. It pays a lot less. So, you know, anywhere from 50 cents to $1 a pound. And most of the time it has to get out of state to Southern New England. So that's a bit of a hurdle, but it's not, you know, completely stopping progress. There's actually one company in Southern Maine right now that is selling to a Southern New England market. And I believe they sold like upwards of 30,000 pounds of green crabs just this year to the bait market. So
any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. And it looks like next up we have the Maine seaweed.